Your name, please.
My name is Doris Derby.
And your occupation and position?
I'm the sales promotion manager of Liberty House, which is a part of the Poor People's Corporation in Jackson, Mississippi.
Miss Derby, in your viewpoint, will it ever be possible for poor black people to break their dependence on whites?
My viewpoint is that only through economic independent development will black people be able to break these ties.
This is Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with Doris Derby, who will reveal to you what she holds to be the responsibilities of her position in life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a public service by this station. Today's guest is Doris Derby, sales promotion manager of Liberty House in Jackson, Mississippi. Here substituting for the moderator of the award-winning series Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy, is the Reverend Bob Libby. Mr. Libby.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Miss Doris Derby. Miss Derby, what is the Poor People's Corporation and what is Liberty House in Jackson, Mississippi?
The Poor People's Corporation is a self-help independent organization. It's nonprofit. Its purpose is to provide financial and technical aid to poor people who want to set up cooperative businesses. Liberty House is a marketing cooperative which the Poor People's Corporation has set up. There are 12 cooperatives which the Poor People's Corporation has set up since August of 1965, and the people are involved in making mostly craft items.
Why was it necessary in Mississippi to start cooperative businesses for black people?
Well, many or most of the black people are out of jobs or just underemployed. Automation, machinery which is being used for all of the cotton picking and field work has put a lot of people out of work, which really weren't jobs in the first place. And people are leaving and going to the north, going to all the big cities, and they're not really finding jobs there either. So the Poor People's Corporation started itself out of a need for people to have employment and cooperation among their race right in the place where they live.
What was the first venture of cooperation that you can recall?
Well, we started with a membership meeting in August of 1965 where people from all over the state that were interested in developing an economic program came together, and money, about $2,000, was raised through private sources. And the people who came to this membership meeting listened to other people who came that said that they wanted to start cooperatives, and the people were voted money to begin their cooperatives and use the money for supplies, equipment, and training, which the Poor People's Corporation also provides. We set up 3 leather craft cooperatives out of that first meeting, and since then we've branched out into cooperatives where products such as candles are made, woodworking cooperatives, sewing cooperatives, and we think that they're pretty good products. And we have a mail order catalog.
I was just going to ask you, how would I get a catalog?
Well, our catalog will be our new catalog will be available in a couple of weeks, and you just have to write to Liberty House in Jackson, Mississippi. We're famous.
And that'll get to
us. Yes, and it'll get to us one way or the other. We have sales totaling through the mail order catalogs over 40,000.
Is that right?
And we also sell our products through retail stores all over the country. And then we have a store in New York, a Liberty House store in New York, and one in Jackson.
Ms. Derby, how much money would someone who worked in a cooperative make an hour or a week?
Well, the amount that the people in the cooperatives make varies. The group is paid for the amount of products which they produce. They're paid by piece. If they make $500, they're paid for $500. And the cost of the price which they are paid for the dolls per piece is made up by a cost sheet, which has the overhead, the materials, the cost of materials, the cost of labor. Now, the cost of labor is the minimum wage. It's figured in there. And then after the group gets the funds for however many products they hand in, they pay their bills and they divide this money equally. Everyone gets paid the same thing. Of course, you have to remember that the pay scale, the wage scale, and the living conditions is much lower in the state of Mississippi than in New York or any of the cities. And I would say that the people make on an average of anywhere from, they could make anywhere, depending on how much training they've had, how fast they produce, how efficient their production is, they would make anywhere from $20 to $50. When they were working as sharecroppers, which most of the people were working as, or maids, gardeners and so on, they would make maybe $15 a week. In some cases, the people don't get much more, but they're working towards something, and they're getting skills. They are also getting the whole idea of cooperation.
What's happening psychologically, spiritually, to the black man who is in the cooperative? Can you see anything happening to his sense of identity, self-respect?
Oh, my heavens, yes. You can just, I mean, I can remember the first meeting where people talked about wanting to have something of their own, and but it was just, at that time, it was just an idea. And now that it's something real, I mean, when you go to the cooperatives, I mean, people actually, they're working, they own this, the things, they're making their own decisions, they talk about what they want, ideas about how they can solve their problems, and they're talking about doing other things. They are thinking in terms of perhaps having nursery schools associated with their cooperative factory, where maybe one member of the cooperative that doesn't sew too well, if it's a sewing cooperative, or has, you know, some physical disability or something, that person could more or less look over the nursery school so that the people who had children and couldn't work otherwise would be able to work. They're talking about having joint medical insurance plans, credit unions associated with the cooperative, all kinds of things. And I think it's just, you know, it's just really quite a change. And they're also bringing in things like, they ask questions, well, if people should one time we had a meeting and one lady said, well, I would like to discuss the point about whether or not anyone can belong to our cooperative if he doesn't register to vote. And that brought on a whole political tone, which the people themselves brought up. We didn't go to them and saying, look, everyone in this co-op has to vote or else. They brought it up, they discussed the pros and cons, and it was a very democratic thing.
How could the white community communicate to the black community in this country that things are different and they want things to change? What to you would be a real communication along these lines?
Well, I think that the schools and employment, black people have to be able to have economic independence and I mean, they have to have more jobs and everything. But we have to be able to determine what we want. We have to do what we have plenty of people who are capable as whites to run things, and we have to have those people doing things for us. We can no longer have white people running our schools, running our churches, running everything. We just can't have it. We have to have a chance, and even if we make mistakes, we have to have a chance to get our own people in there and have our own way of living what we want. There just has to be a rapid change of getting black people into positions where they can do things for their own people, you know, people who understand each other, and not have white people telling us what they think is best for us. I met someone in Connecticut a while ago, and he proceeded to tell me why he, with a lot of other middle-class whites and a few middle-class black people, thought that the people in the ghetto area in a certain town in Connecticut should move, and that they didn't want to move and have urban renewal there. And I just didn't think that they should have to say that those people should move. Those people should decide whether they wanted to move, and if they didn't want to move, they should have the money available to improve their houses right where they were. His argument was that it would be too costly to improve those old houses. But the people don't want to move. They have their friends there. They have their whole way of living. And I think that the money should be available for people in some areas that want to stay there, and that the homes could be improved, even if it is more costly. I think that the people in the community should be the ones to decide whether they want to leave or not. I don't think that... I'm not giving my opinion on whether they should stay there or not, but they should decide. And whether it is more costly or not, there is money available, and we shouldn't be spending it, you know, in foreign countries fighting. We should be spending it here for the poor people.
Doris Derby, why did you decide to go down to Mississippi instead of staying in New York, where you probably could have gotten a high-paying job in any number of fields?
Well, I had worked in Albany, Georgia in 1962. I wanted to go south. I felt like I wanted to see the rest of, you know, of what was happening in black communities. At that time, there were sit-ins and demonstrations in Albany, Georgia, and I just wanted to be a part of things and really know what was going on and see my roots, you might say. And I worked with SCLC and SNCC, and I felt that, let's say this, there was a need. The people that were there working said there was a need for black people who had some skills to just work there. I mean, you know, on a constant, you know, with a concentrated effort, stable, not just here and there. I just felt that there were a group of young people that I found more young people who were interested in that kind of thing down there than I did in New York. People who were sincere, and we've been able to, I think, accomplish a lot without getting involved in a lot of bureaucracy, shall we say, and distractions. And there aren't too many distractions in Mississippi. I mean, you just work.
Thank you, Doris Derby, for being our guest and for giving us your viewpoint.
Thank you.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced as a public service by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church. Today's guest was Doris Derby, sales promotion manager of Liberty House in Jackson, Mississippi.